Hello, everyone. My name is Michael, and you are listening to Money Never Sleeps. Now, this is our first episode of the podcast, so before I get started, I'm going to tell you guys a little bit about myself. My formal education is in history and economics, and I've been passively swing trading options for the last few years with enough success to say that I'm not that bad at it. What I want to do with this podcast is provide some insight into market mechanics and bring in long-term perspectives on a strategy, a certain market shift, or random topics associated with changes in commodity prices around the world. In today's episode, I want to talk about a few things, first being Tesla and the magnificent surge in the stock's price over the last few weeks. At the time of recording, on the 7th of July, Tesla opened at $1,400 from a two-week low of $930. Now, Tesla's surge sent other EV, that's electric vehicle, stocks up along with it, namely Chinese competitor NIO and Workhorse, ticker WKHS. Workhorse is probably the most interesting one of these two of all the current small cap players, and I'll include Nikola in this one since they have yet to really show us an operating vehicle. Workhorse is the most viable. They've been around since 1998 and produce electric trucks for last mile delivery. UPS is their biggest client right now, and they've been testing truck launch drone technology recently in an attempt to compete with Amazon Prime's delivery drones. Last mile delivery is a huge space, with tons of small companies popping up to contract for Amazon and other large online retailers for regional deliveries. Workhorse stock surged from $2 to $22 before capitulating and settling around $15. What could send it flying again is a USPS contract valued at $8 billion. Keep in mind that Workhorse's market cap is only around $1.5 billion, definitely making it an EV company to continue to watch this year. But let's go back to Tesla. So, you might be wondering what caused this meteoric rise. Was it good news? Was it Elon selling short shorts? Well, it's kind of a combination of all of the above and a not-so-little technical discrepancy we like to call a gamma squeeze. Before I explain that, I'm going to give you guys a brief background in the Greeks. For the purpose of this example, we're going to focus on Delta, Gamma, and Vega, the Greeks that most fundamentally affect options. Delta is the rate of change of the premium or the value of an option contract per dollar change in the stock price. Let me explain that. If an option has a delta of 1, which is really high, the highest it can be, an increase of $1 in the underlying price of the stock increases the value of the option by $100, and vice versa for a decrease. Gamma measures the rate of change of delta per dollar in underlying in a 1 to 100 ratio. So if I have a gamma of 0.03 and a delta of 1, the stock increases by $2, then my option increases by $100 for the first dollar increase and $103 for the second dollar, and vice versa for a decrease where you subtract the gamma from the delta for each dollar it decreases. Finally, we have Vega, which is our trickier one. Vega measures an options premium's price sensitivity to a 1% change in implied volatility, which in layman terms is a metric that moves around with changes in the stock price and a higher interest in a particular options contract. So now we go back to Tesla. When an institution opens a big options position in a stock, they go long or short a bunch of deltas. That presents the risk of some loss. So a big player is going to hedge that position by purchasing stock to create a delta neutral position. The problem, as we learned before, is that delta is subject to change. So this starts a snowball, where a purchase of shares to neutralize delta increases the stock price because it messes with supply and demand balances, and it actually sends the delta even higher because the delta increases with the price of the stock. Non-institutional buyers see this and speculate the price will continue to go up. So they purchase options with a strike price much higher than the current underlying value. We call this an out-of-the-money option. So let's say the price is $1,300, and a bunch of people go ahead and purchase an option with a $1,600 strike. All of a sudden, volatility spikes, and that increases the value of an option with little change in the underlying, changing the delta and gamma with it, creating an even bigger delta imbalance. No institutional investor is going to go home unhedged at the end of the day, so they're going to go ahead and rebalance the risk by purchasing even more stock to neutralize the delta once again, We see this all the time with a stock like Tesla, where it'll go up in the morning, stay flat the whole day, and then in the last hour or two of the day, we see a big ramp up for another few percent. So at this point, you might be asking, shouldn't people understand this is happening? Well, yes and no. That brings us to a second issue. 80% of trades placed in the market are done by an algorithm, a program that looks for changes in Greeks and opportunities to capitalize on risk, as well as big events like news. So an algorithm will look at a spike in a stock's price, purchase more options, cover those options with more stock, and send everything higher without anybody even noticing. Throw some good news like a big manufacturing numbers beat, like we saw with Tesla a week ago, and investor sentiment presents a really nice catalyst for a squeeze just like this. On top of that, we get shorts covering their losses with even more shares, and all of this keeps driving Gamma, Delta, and Vega, forcing even more purchasing, and you get the idea. So how long will this go on? Well, it's hard to tell, but it's likely that we see this keep going through earnings, and we can bank on the chance of a volatility crush afterwards to bring Tesla back down to earth on a Falcon 9. Over the last few years, Tesla's become the biggest consumer of lithium-ion batteries in the world. Some analysts predict that by 2050, the demand for the metals essential for lithium-ion batteries may be in frighteningly short supply. Some of you may ask, why not just go with a different technology? Lithium-ion batteries have been documented as dangerous and degrading in their performance over the years. To a degree, this is true. A great example of this is the battery in your 3-year-old iPhone that used to last for 2 days and now barely makes it to lunch. Lithium-ion batteries can be described as the best of a bad bunch. After all, if a competing power source could offer the same quality as lithium-ion batteries and not show the same signs of degradation, it would have led the market long before lithium-ion reached such an established status. All in all, experts agree that lithium-ion batteries have a long way to go before they're fully developed, but a lack of investable alternatives suggests that, for now at least, the only way is up. For lithium-ion, the question of its sustainability extends not only to the technological level, but the supply chain level too. Market reporter Roskill claims that 2020 alone will see a potential 13.5% increase in the world's lithium requirements, and it won't stop growing from there. One authority, a research organization called Stanford C. Bernstein, predicts that lithium mining operations will need investments that total anywhere between $350 and $750 billion to accommodate the ever-increasing demand for batteries. Tesla is worth $260 billion now. Additionally, even Elon Musk has addressed Tesla's shortcomings in meeting consumer demands for the Model 3. When he said, battery module production has been a limiting factor on output. We were a little overconfident and complacent in thinking this is something we know and understand. The shortage won't be due to a lack of raw materials, but rather a lack of mines available to meet demand. Lithium can be found across the globe in North and South America, Europe, Africa, and Asia, but nearly half of the global lithium supply comes from Australia and South America. Political problems and market instability complicate the issue. In Chile, regulations limit lithium production to under 80,000 metric tons a year. To put this in perspective, globally, lithium mines produced an estimated total of 77,000 metric tons in 2019. This increase is significant, especially from 2010 when production was just 28,000 metric tons, but a huge decrease from 95,000 metric tons just in 2018. Over the next 10 years, it's projected that an additional 800,000 metric tons on top of what's mined already will be required to meet projected demands. Lithium's biggest inefficiency is really the mining process. To extract lithium for battery production, it needs to be discovered, usually by drilling holes in the ground and just hoping to find some. The next and equally ridiculous source of lithium are salt lake brines, seawater, and geothermal water. In fact, the reserves of lithium in those water sources are 70 to 80% of the total lithium reserves of the world. The brining process, as it's known, is extremely time-consuming and inefficient. Once lithium is discovered in this mineral-rich water, it's left to evaporate in huge pools for months. What remains is lithium salt, which is further processed to extract pure lithium. What we have here is a finite resource. The most recent figures from the U.S. Geological Survey indicate that total lithium resources, that's including both brine and hard rock, to be between 55 and 80 million metric tons, enough to carry us through a few hundred years at today's pace, but only a few decades if we continue ramping up lithium use in battery production and replace fossil fuels in cars with batteries and electric vehicles. So, what does this mean for the market? Well, if you're looking to invest in long-term resource mining, lithium has its own big four. Albemarle, based in Charlotte, North Carolina, FMC Corporation based in Philadelphia, Tianqi Lithium in Sichuan, China, and Sociedad Química in Chile. FMC and Albemarle specialize in granite extraction in the United States, where less than 10% of the world's lithium reserves are. Tianqi Lithium is the biggest, responsible on its own for 46% of global production, mining in the Gobi Desert, Australia, and Chile through its partial ownership of our last player, Sociedad Química. Tianqi continues to grow every year, but escalating tensions between the U.S. and China could send lithium prices soaring, a bad sign for battery makers like Tesla. This is really just the tip of the iceberg. Lithium is one of dozens of minerals needed for the efficient electrification of the world. Solar panels alone use aluminum, cadmium, copper, gallium, indium, iron, lead, you get the picture, all of which are experiencing their own shortages and mining problems. Interestingly enough, there are some solutions underway that could make the dependency on the short supply of lithium and cobalt a little bit less severe. American Manganese, a company based in Vancouver, mines cobalt and lithium from failed batteries, costing roughly 30 cents a pound. The materials can be resold for up to $20 a pound. The process involves an automated system that removes the casing and soaks the battery cells in a chemical solution that causes the lithium and cobalt to precipitate. One of the challenges the company faces is the lack of standardization in battery packaging across other companies, making the process very difficult. It's estimated that up to 10% of the world's supply of lithium and cobalt could come from recycled materials in the next 5 years. I don't like to hype penny stocks, but American Manganese, its competitors, and the big lithium players will definitely be companies to watch for this emerging technology. It's conceivable that a company like American Manganese or its tech could be acquired by FMC or Albemarle in the coming years. In order to generate enough batteries, forgetting resource difficulties and global geopolitical constraints, Tesla has to build approximately 100 gigafactories at a cost totaling at least $500 billion. But for now, we might just have to rely on Elon to solve this problem too. As he says himself, the sun doesn't shine all the time, so we have to store it. Thank you all for listening to our first episode. I'll be doing an episode every Sunday for the time being, hopefully getting longer and introducing more topics each week. If you liked it, please consider leaving a comment and sharing this with your friends. As always, remember to do your own due diligence and be careful out there.